I was going to say it is interesting to look at maps, soil maps, and where most of your, you know, historic soybean and corn crops are on higher grade soils, and say Boone and Crockett trophies are. So it's really amazing to see that where you have high soil quality, you have higher and bigger scoring bucks. Now there are some outliers, you know, South Texas and other places. So,
sure.
But it does. You are basically transferring the nutrients from the soil into the animal and into his bones and into his antlers through that plant. And so the higher nutrition it is, the more of it.
Camel boots on my feet, bow in my hand, walking in the early dawn.
Wise Eye Technologies present American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge and his friends. I'm the Red Bone Mike Crace. Wayne Locke joins me on the program today. Wayne, how you doing?
Good. I'm busy as heck, though. I didn't sleep last night, to say the least. The coyotes, I don't know if you saw my Facebook post this morning, coyotes kept me up all night long. And not only were they howling, but they got my dogs barking. And, of course, I got enough dogs that that'll keep you up alone by themselves. But, it was probably about a five-hour ordeal during the night. Not good.
Wow. Well, I know you reached out to our buddy Eddie Owens, the predator hunting guru for our part of the country. And he said once the wind died down, maybe y'all could try and eradicate that problem. But you had a bunch of them, huh?
Oh, yeah. And it was coming from all directions. I know they say that you know, sometimes it sounds like a lot, and it could only be a couple. Mm-hmm. But this was coming from over by Alex's place, two different spots, directions on my property. So, yeah, they're all over in the back area here. And that might explain why I still have no turkeys on my Wise Eye cameras.
Well, that probably is why you don't have any turkeys on your Wise Eye cameras. So, yeah, you talked last week that you'd had it up for a couple of days and hadn't had any. Are you still not seeing any turkeys around the place?
No, not at all. I even moved a couple of them to different locations, tried something different, and still not one turkey. Again, coyotes and deer. Those are two things getting in my camera.
Well, that's not a good sign, Wayne, as we grow ever closer to the spring turkey hunt.
Yeah, and it looks like, believe it or not, Mike, you're going to love it. Looks like it's already done for the year. And I got a call from my cardiologist today. And they're looking to do my open heart surgery the last week of April.
Okay.
What perfect timing that is for turkey
season. Not really. So the last weekend of April. So yeah, just about a month in.
Right, and they say you're pretty much out of service for anywhere from 60 to 90 days. So that shoots the whole spring turkey for me. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to be out there still calling. And as soon as I can get up, moving around, and you know, trying to do something. But they said, way in heck, I'm allowed to pull a bow or shoot a gun with. The surgical procedure I haven't done.
Yeah, that would not work well together at all. All right, Wayne, one thing that people are doing in the outdoors right now, and I'm fascinated by this. I've never done it. I've never even watched it done, but I'm seeing a lot of pictures. I actually read an MDC report today on it, and that is snagging paddlefish in the big lakes, in the big rivers. And these people are catching these paddlefish. They're like 50 pounds and 40 pounds. And as I got to reading this article about it from Missouri Department of Conservation, it's a very interesting sport. And there are a lot of regulations that you need to know. That's why I would not go out and try it on my own. But if there's anybody out there that does paddlefish snagging, and you're going to be going on a weekend here, and I don't even know how long the season goes, but I would love to tag along in, even if I don't get an opportunity to try and snag one of those paddlefish, I would just like to watch it done. And these fish are, you know, they're prehistoric creatures.
Yeah.
You know, they got the long bills, you know, the spoon bills, and they're big old prehistoric looking fish. And I would just like to see some of them. So anybody out there, give me a call or find me on Facebook. If you're going to be going and you've got, you know, some extra room, I would love to go along and watch that done sometime. Because it looks really interesting.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of regulations and a lot of rules where you can, you know, snag and where you can't. And, you know, you can use different kind of hooks and blah, blah, blah. So it sounds like a very interesting sport.
Yeah, it actually reminds me a lot of when I was a teenager and I'd go out with, you know, Ansel and Jeff, a couple buddies of mine. We grew up doing a lot of outdoor activities together. And we used to snag carp. And you always were in for a fight when you got the carp at the tail end because it was going away from you and had, you know, full bore ability to get away from you. And, man, you know, using light pound test line and snagging hooks and stuff, weighted hooks. And, man, it was a lot of fun as a kid. That was some of my best memories.
Well, and I would liken it probably, although on a smaller scale, to grabbing suckers. I mean, that's something we do here in the Ozarks. You know, you find a creek where the suckers are showing. That usually happens, I believe it's around Memorial Day. And you go out and you find where those suckers are showing, and, you know, you lower a treble hook down and you just grab them. And it's the same way. And if you get a good one, you know, a good one, it's a pretty good fight. And maybe the best eating fish on the riverbank that there is. I know people, you know, we argue about that all the time. You know, is it walleye? Is it crappie? You know, is it catfish? But, boy, you get a big old load of suckers and you get those in the boat and you start cooking them. It is some kind of good stuff. But anyway, and I guess that's about the closest thing that I've ever done to snagging paddlefish. And I can't imagine hooking into a 50-pound fish.
I know. That's ridiculous.
On one of the big lakes or, you know, the river tributaries or whatever. And I'm not even sure exactly where to go. And if you go to Missouri Department of Conservation, folks, and you're interested in this, again, on Wednesday, we're recording on Wednesday, they had a nice article about that, and all the regulations, and even the latest update on where the fish are, where you can go to catch them, and even some helpful tips about water temperature and when the big fish are going to come up, and the fact that they have to be at least 30 to 35 inches, I believe, before you can keep them. I mean, just a very interesting article about paddlefish snagging, and I thought it was just fantastic. So, anyway, we got a cool guest going to be joining us here in a little bit. Wayne, tell us who's on the program today.
We're going to have Brad Doyle from Eagle Seed. You know, he's a frequent flyer with us, and probably because we can never get enough information just off of one radio station show with him. He's just got so much. We've got to have him on quite a few times throughout the year. Plus, because everything changes throughout the year, the way you're planning, what you're planning. So we're going to have Brad on. We're going to be talking about different techniques for planning for this time. And I know he's going to be talking about the soybean, because you got to start thinking about that. You know, never too early to start thinking about that stuff. And I know he also wants to talk about different ways that I guess you're now able to test soil. So that would be pretty interesting, what news he has for that.
Okay, very good. And he's always, I mean, he's just so knowledgeable about what's going on. So Brad will be with us. Brad Doyle from Eagle Seed coming up here in just a little bit. Before we take the break, anything else you want to mention? We did mention that Alex is on location again and unable to be with us again this week. Hopefully next week, Alex will be back.
Yeah, we're hoping. Keeping my fingers crossed. He was hoping to be here today, and they ended up flying him back out. I tell you, he's keeping busy, but I still say he's going to these different states and he's scouting, just not telling us.
Well, he's been in California, and that's a good place to be scouting. I don't care what it is you're hunting for. All right,
folks,
we'll be back. More American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge and his friends coming up in just a minute.
Hi, everybody. This is Jessica White with Wander Woman, Kansas. You're listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends.
Wishing on some luck. I've been on a big boy for a while. I could load him in the back of my
Redbone, what would you say if I could tell you that you could kill a buck on a certain day?
I would say you're crazy. There's no way to predict how the bucks are going to move.
Well, you're wrong. There's a new camera out called Wise Eye Technologies. These guys can predict the actual deer movement, exact time that a deer is going to come through.
Really? Wise Eye Technology?
This camera has 5-megapixel pictures, has a GPS system built inside, and it's an experience using this camera. It collects data and tells you the movement, wind direction, everything.
On a camera?
On a camera. WiseEyeTechnologies.com.
And how do I find out more information about these guys?
You go to WiseEyeSmartCam.com. I'm using them. You should, too. Make your hunt easier. Use WiseEye.
Eagle Seed presents American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge and his friends. I'm the Redbone Mike Crace. Wayne Locke is with us on the telephone. And we want to welcome in on the conversation today, Mr. Brad Doyle from Eagle Seed. Brad, how in the world are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
All right, so we wanted to have you on, and I know you were on just a few weeks ago talking about getting ready for getting the food plots in for the spring turkey hunt. And It was about that. Well, I think it was back in February, maybe even late January. So it was time to start thinking about it. Now's the time to take action, isn't it, Brad?
It is. The soils are warming up. A lot of our spring rains that have come through hopefully have passed by. And we're just waiting for that magical 60 to 65 degree soil temperature to warm up that will send us all right to the field.
All right, so 60 to 65, those are the magic numbers.
That for most of our spring planted crops, soybeans, cowpeas, sunflowers, grain sorghum, those are all really good times. If you're planting in a garden out behind your house, you can go a little bit earlier. But for food plots, when we have wildlife available there 24/7, we want to make sure it's a little bit warmer.
Sure. Yeah, I remember one time I was actually doing a live broadcast for the radio station I work for, and we were at a greenhouse. And the gentleman there that was head of the greenhouse, very knowledgeable about planting gardens and flowers. And he said, you know, a lot of people have been coming early and buying their stuff. And I keep telling them, till the temperature of the soil reaches 58, there's really no reason to plant those things because they're not going to grow until that temperature hits 58 degrees. So I guess what you're telling us now, that 60, 65, that is optimal time for getting those seeds to germinate and sprout.
That is correct. So we want to put the seed in there, and typically 3 to 5 days would love for it to come out of the ground. If you put it in colder than that, you know, it could take 7 days, it could take 2 weeks. So that reduction in slowed growth also kind of gets it off to a slow start. So waiting just a week or two more without a threat of cool weather coming in makes a big difference on that early season growth.
All right, so Wayne.
Yeah, that actually, Brad. Yeah, I was going to say, Brad, that actually brings me to a question, and that is, I know, like with a garden, let's say you get your vegetables out there, you think you're good to go, and all of a sudden you get one of those freaky frost nights and it ends up wiping out, you know, half your tomatoes or whatever. Do you have that same issue to worry about with the food plots? Like they start coming up, and all of a sudden in May, man, we get a frost comes in, and is it going to destroy our food plot, or are you pretty resilient?
So it can take some frost. Whenever you get down below, say, 32 degrees and even 28 degrees, that's when you get real damage within the plant. So there's actually cellular bursting happening. But, yeah, if a mild, cool temperature that drops down will just slow the growth, and it'll usually survive that.
All right, so Brad. Okay. Yeah, Brad, my question, and I'm fascinated by this soil temperature thing, so excuse me for asking maybe dumb questions, but say my temperature in my soil is about 55, and Brad Doyle says it needs to be 60 to 65. On a nice sunny day, will the soil temperature rise, even though maybe the temperature doesn't get above 60, with that sun beating down on the ground, will you get the radiant heat in the soil, will that help raise that soil temperature?
It will. And what we typically look at, what time of day we're trying to find that magical temperature, is about 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning.
Gotcha.
So that is the magic hour.
Okay. So you want to do that? You want to do that really before the sun gets up high in the sky and beats down on it then.
So definitely the sunny days versus cloudy days will warm that soil up quicker. It also matters if there's cover on the soil surface and how wet it is. So ideally, if you have dry soil, darker soil, it'll warm up quicker. And you are correct. As the air temperature rises in the day and falls at night, that is where we want. It doesn't quite move as much in the soil, so it's more steady rise as we get into spring.
Okay.
And so putting it in there, you know, planting seeds around an inch deep, that's where we're trying to measure that soil temperature and have all the right conditions to get it out of ground as quick as possible.
Wow, very cool. So, guys, it is not too late to get those food plots in for the spring turkey hunt. I mean, that's kind of where we're going to focus today. And Wayne, you were telling me that we had something we wanted to talk about today as far as getting our soil tested. I guess that's where we ought to pick up right now as part of the preparation process. And we got about 2 minutes here. So, Wayne, go ahead and if you want here for a couple of minutes, talk about this new testing process or new ways they test the soil.
I was going to, Brad, I was going to ask, you know, some of the questions that I get asked all the time on Facebook is, when should I be putting my fertilizer down Do I do it before, you know, because I'm not, not fertilizer, my like cow manure and horse manure, stuff like that. They want to get that implemented in and this in. Do they have to wait a certain amount of time before they do their soil testing? Should they do it before that, after that? Is there a timeline? I mean, what's your thought?
Yeah. Well, anytime you put out fertilizer, it's better to have a soil test done prior to that. And that way you know what that soil like is like. And then it's based off the recommendation of the soil analysis, then you can apply the proper amount of fertilizer or manure. And I would normally plant or put out manure as close to planting as possible. You can disc it in. You can work it in. A lot of it's spread on top of the ground. The key is just not to get too much in certain clumps or areas that doesn't broadcast as well as commercial or granular fertilizer. So you just need to be careful about the application process of that.
Okay, because I was going to say, like with me, I have to just take it in there, dump it, and then I use my tractor to spread it with a blade. And then I just go through with the cultivator and just kind of scrape it in. Because I can't get
that's a great method.
Okay.
You know, a lot of the manures, they bring the N, P, and K that we're looking for in normal fertilizers. They also bring in a lot of micronutrients and biological activity as well as organic matter. So that's why it is such a great, want to call it a natural, process or fertilization of the soil. That goes way back in history on how, you know, we did it in the past.
So before,
all right, well, hey, I know we need to go to break here real quick, and when we get back, we're going to pick back up on soil testing and that, because I got a few more questions I'm sure everybody's going to want to know before they start putting their seed down. And you're listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends.
This is Brenda Valentine, and you're listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends.
Of a big old year after year, got my gear.
Hornady presents American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends. This is Wayne Locke. I'm on the phone calling into the studio with Redbone Mike Crace, and we have Brad Doyle from Eagle Seed on the phone with us. When we left off the last segment, Brad, we were talking about fertilization and horse manure and that. That's what I use. I take my pony stuff, and I just kind of let it spread out and then move it over during the wintertime. Now, I've been adding it throughout the whole winter, just taking it because I have to do small little truckloads back there. And then, like I said, I cultivate it in. Now, do you have, you said it's better to test it though before I do the manure, which I did not know. I was actually going to test it after I got the manure all put in. Is that now going to mess up my soil sampling or?
Yeah, it may show a positive, maybe more strength than's actually there. We just like to have that fertilizer you put out kind of mix in, mellow out, and be more stable within the soil. So you wouldn't have just it all concentrated in one area. But yeah, typically, Wayne, you can wait 12 months from now. You can retest again and see how much you move that needle. So it's a continuous building of fertility over time. If you're putting out lime in addition to bring the pH up, it's also a great, tool to measure the level of fertility that you have. How much do you want to invest in your soil? I mean, that's the question. And that soil test can tell you pretty quickly and accurately what you need.
Well, I want to invest as much as I need to get a 160 to 170 class deer. that's what I want to. Money, if it's going to cost me $1,000, great. If it's going to cost me more than that, I just got to do more explaining to the wife. That's the way I look at it. Mike, I know you had a question about different types of fertilizer.
Well, my first answer to your question is how much money you're going to invest to get a 160 or 170 class deer. It depends on how much it's going to cost you to go up north and hunt. Because they don't have a whole lot of those here in southern Missouri and northern Arkansas. There are a few, and there are more than there used to be. That's a tall order, Wayne. My goodness.
Right, I know. My buddy TJ up in Ohio says, it sounds like you're just going to have to come back to Ohio once a week, or 1 week out of the year to get that. But, hey, we'll work on it here.
Yeah, work on it.
I was going to say, it is interesting to look at maps, soil maps, and where most of your you know, historic soybean and corn crops are on higher grade soils, and say Boone and Crockett trophies are. So it's really amazing to see that where you have high soil quality, you have higher and bigger scoring bucks. Now there are some outliers, you know, South Texas and other places. So,
sure.
But it does. You are basically transferring the nutrients from the soil into the animal and into his bones and into his antlers through that plant. And so the higher nutrition it is, the more available nutrients that the deer can consume and benefit from that.
Yeah, I know we kind of, I don't know how we got off on animal waste fertilizers, but we did. And I asked you while we're off the air, do you prefer the chicken litter or cow manure, horse manure, or rabbit manure? And you said definitely the chicken litter. Why is that?
I guess there's more of it available over here. Here in the flatlands of Northeast Arkansas, we're pulling it out of the Ozarks, where there's a lot more chicken houses around. And it's just a great fertilizer. We're putting out higher amounts. We're putting out 1 ton or even 2 tons per acre every year. So it's been proven. There's a lot more research on it. And I don't know where I can go find that amount of litter of any other animal. So I believe it's just availability.
Yeah, much more available. And I guess, to be honest, a little bit easier to spread as well.
Absolutely. It still takes a special type of truck that has the walking floor bottom. But in the out of the back, it comes through a spinner spreader.
Yep. All right.
Now,
so
what about cost-wise?
You know, Wayne, it depends on how far you have to haul it. If you've got neighbors in your area that have it, there it's probably going to be fairly cheap. It costs me to drive it an hour from its source and another $7 or $8 an acre to spread it. But, you know, we're putting out 7 tons at a time on a truck. I'm getting it delivered 25 tons at a time, and we're using several hundred tons. So I think it's really all in the amount that that you need and how, because someone's got to come deliver that and load it and spread it. So if you can do it yourself, it's going to take a lot more, you know, backbone and hard work, but it'll be cheaper on you.
All right, so
I'm just thinking about those guys that only have those 1-acre to 3-acre plots that they can say, hey, if it's going to be cheaper than using commercial fertilizer, then maybe the chicken manure is the way to go.
Right. And like I said, it's all in the, you know, can you get it? If you can't get it, then commercial fertilizer bag is a lot easier to apply. I mean, anybody can do it through any kind of spreader.
Sure. Okay. Now, my question, Brad Doyle, here before we get done with this, and by the way, we're talking with Brad Doyle from Eagle Seed, who is the expert, and I know we're going to talk about food plots and getting those in and what to plant this time of year, but final question here in this segment. I always hear people say, you need some lime and fertilizer. So even if you're using, say, chicken litter, you also need to put lime. I mean, are those totally different things, and do they affect the soil differently?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike, and that's where that soil test analysis, you know, if it's free through your state or it's $10 through a private company, it's well worth the money, the time, and the investment, because what is that soil test telling you is your soil pH, and that would be the acidity of the soil, and most soils in southern Missouri, northern Arkansas are acidic natively, so we're trying to bring that up to around 6.5. 7.0 would be neutral, but we're slightly less than neutral. And lime is the way we do that. Get the soil test. It would tell you what the soil pH is. It will tell you how much lime you need per acre.
Gotcha. So you take that soil.
That will actually free up nutrients in your soil and allow your plant to grow better. So it is not a fertilizer. It is simply correcting the soil pH of the acidity, and that acidity in the soil can keep your roots from accessing nutrients within the soil.
Gotcha. So people really do need to do both. If the soil test says you need to do both, you need to do both.
Exactly. If I had to put a priority on a, you know, new to you property, find out what that pH is and invest in that lime first. You can always spoon feed it some fertilizer along the way, but
But correcting that pH would be my top priority first.
Well, folks,
good to know.
That is absolutely great information. All right, we're talking with Brad Doyle from Eagle Seed. We will continue with more American Roots Outdoors Radio right after this.
Right here, right now. This is Chancey Walters listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge, the Ozark Herd Bull.
Roots passed on down, planted deep in the ground around your heart. So you never gotta worry.
Hi, everybody. This is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. How many of you need an attorney? If you're like me, sometimes you do. I go to Zane Prevett at the Prevett Law Office, Willow Springs, Missouri. No case is too big or too small. You can call Zane at 417-469-3535. Zane Prevett at the Prevett Law Office. This is Alex Rutledge. And he is my attorney.
Hornady Ammunition presents American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge and his friends. I'm Red Bull Mike Crace. Wayne Locke is with us, of course. And we've got Brad Doyle from Eagle Seed. And Brad, we've kind of talked about in the segments you've been on so far today about getting that soil ready, which is really what we need to be doing right now. If we didn't do it beforehand, because some of the old timers tell me you need to put that fertilizer down in February. So are we kind of running out of time here?
No, I think your fertilizer, you can put out planting. We can even put out nitrogen sources of fertilizer after we get the crop up, especially for, you know, corn or grain sorghum, milo, any of the grass plants that, or sunflowers even, that require that nitrogen. It's not too late.
All right, so we're coming up on turkey season in both Missouri and Arkansas. Brad, what is key to getting in the ground on those food plots to attract turkeys to my farm?
We still have some time to get clover established. It's just not going to be as big or fast growing as if we put it out last fall or if we frost seeded it back in late February. But we have plenty of options for spring growth of sunflowers, cowpeas. Soybeans are great. The turkeys are not going to benefit as much as the deer will.
Mm-hmm.
So clover, get it out very quickly while we have time. And as we move into late April, 1st of May, we'll shift into those other spring annual crops that will help the deer more than they will
now,
the turkeys.
You're saying clover. Is there a particular type? Because there's many types of clovers. Is there a particular one you find that would be beneficial this for spring? And then to follow up on that, what's your recommendation of how to get it in? Because there's different methods of getting it in the ground.
Absolutely. So, yeah, clovers are small-seeded anyway, so we never want to plant them very deep. Quarter inch is about as deep as you want to go. So a lot of times a light scarification of the soil broadcast the clover and just dragging or rolling it in. That's about all it takes for clover. Two main types of clover. You have annual types of clover that only live 1 year, produce seed, and they die. Or you have perennial clovers that last year after year if they're taken care of properly. So if I'm going to establish a long-time clover field, then the perennial's the way to go. But the annual has an advantage in this year, in the first year, as it will produce bigger, more growthy plants. So something to consider if you're short term and you need something fast growing, I would go to more of an annual mix.
All right, now when you talk about the perennial that's going to come back year after year, Brad, and you said if you take proper care of it, what is that proper care? What does that include?
So obviously, we've talked about the liming part of that, and meeting the clover's need from a soil testing point of view. But it's also controlling grasses that can compete against the clover, and frost seeding any thin spots to keep it, in a full solid stand.
Okay, so just keeping it growing good and keeping it kind of as the only game in town, so to speak.
Absolutely. So springtime, one of the biggest challenges with springtime planting of clover is that you have perennial grasses, pasture-type grasses that they want to grow too.
Yeah.
And so we need to hold them back and keep them from out-competing that clover as it's getting established. So
grass herbicides or Safe on Clover. That's one option. And we do have a few options for those pesky broadleaf weeds that try to come and compete against the clover as well. So it takes a little bit to get a clover stand established. It's not as fulfilling as, you know, a 4 foot tall spring summer annual. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of got to nurture it a little bit.
All right. So and Wayne,
I got a question for you.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I was going to say, now, for those guys that, you know, your deer season ended and, you know, people like me, Mike, and you, Brad, and Alex, we start thinking spring turkey. But what about the guys that are already thinking, hey, let's start thinking about deer next fall already. What is it that they should start looking at putting in their plots now? And again, let's go back to, I mean, are we talking drilling, broadcasting? You know, what are you recommending for plots that are going to be good for the summer for nutrition and antler growth, all the way into being able to use it in the fall time?
So if I'm going to go dual purpose, grazing and winter carryover, my go-to is soybeans. Wayne, I mean, you know, that's kind of our specialty with the Eagle Seed Forest soybeans. They can be planted with a planter. You can drill them in or you can broadcast them. Main thing is just not to get them too deep. We're going to go about 3/4 inch deep. And that would be my number one choice. We have other options for deer as well, but soybeans produce a bean that can make it through the winter. There's not a lot of other summer annuals other than corn that will actually stay on that plant. So if that is not in your cards or your field's been heavier browsed, then we need to be thinking early August, what kind of green field do we want to plant? And we've got many options for that.
Right. Those soybeans, okay. And y'all produce soybeans, I mean, they are produced specifically for putting in for deer food plots, correct?
Absolutely, Mike. We've got a brand new blend that we came out with, one of a kind. We call it Multimax. Normal soybeans put on 3 leaves per leaflet. And my wife bred one that will produce 7 or more leaves per leaflet. So
wow.
It's more than doubled the amount of leaves on the plant. And, yeah, it is specifically meant to help the deer provide more food for them and still produce the beans on the plant that we know with normal soybeans.
Yeah, I'm looking at that on your website right now, the Multimax, right? That's a good-looking plant.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's brand new. We just released it last week. So all that information is on the website. And if you have any questions, they can always reach out to us.
All right. So, Brad, I mean, y'all are a commercial soybean, and you do other things, too, as far as produce seeds. But, I mean, individuals can come to your plant and purchase their products. They don't have to go through another company, do they?
No, absolutely not. We do have those outlets out there.
Mm-hmm.
MFA in Missouri and you know, co-ops in Arkansas, but you're more than welcome to drive down to Northeast Arkansas and Poinsett County and come visit with us and let us help you out and make that decision.
All right, very good. Wayne, you have any more questions? I know we're just about out of time here, and I know we want to give Brad a little bit of time here to tell people where to find him and where to follow him on you know, on Facebook and the website and all those things too.
Yeah, the only question, last question I had for you is, as far as soybean was concerned, is when is the earliest to start to put that soybean in the ground?
Around here, Wayne, for your neighborhood and mine, I'm looking at probably 1st of May would be most ideal. We have good warm temperatures, usually good soil moisture at that time. We can get it out of the ground 3 to 5 days, and once it's out, we don't have any kind of threat of frost or cool spell coming in. That's when is go time. And want to get that plant established because we know in our area that July and August are always going to be hot and dry. So the older that plant is, the sooner we can get it in the ground, the better it's going to survive that brutal summer heat.
Excellent. And now, Brad, where can people reach you at?
Yeah, on our website is eagleseed.com, or you can call us at 870-684-7377.
Yeah, and you're located in Poinsett County in Northeast Arkansas, and give folks the town and tell them how to get there.
Yeah, so we're about 18 miles south of Jonesboro, Arkansas, off of Highway 49 in the town of Wiener. And, yeah, just come on down here, and
we're in farm country here, a lot of soybeans and rice. We've been open since 1975, but our family's been farming for nearly 100 years.
Wow, fantastic. Brad, thank you very much for being with us. And Wayne, Brad is going to continue with some more tips and hints on the bonus segment, correct?
That's correct. And if you missed any part of the radio show, just hop on to the podcast. You can listen to the entirety of the radio show and the bonus segment, which you can only hear, of course, on the podcast. Just go to your favorite podcast carrier, type in American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge, click subscribe, and make sure you leave us a review. We always love the reviews, especially five-star reviews. And make sure you leave your name and the city you're from and state so we get a hold of when we do the drawings.
All right, very good. That's going to wrap it up for this week, folks. Hope you've enjoyed the program. And again, go over and check out some more information from Brad Doyle and Eagle Seed over on the bonus segment. I'm Red Bull Mike Race for Brad Doyle and Wayne Locke. When your roots run deep and strong,
there's no reason to fear the wind.
We'll see you next week, everybody.
So you never got to worry what the wind might do. American Roots.
Thank you for joining us for today's American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge. You can find us on Facebook. Look us up on the World Wide Web at AmericanRootsOutdoors.com. We'll be back again next week on this great radio station.
Texas Raised Hunting Products presents American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends. This is Wayne Locke. I got Mike Crace on the phone with us and Brad Doyle from Eagle Seed. And if you're listening to this, that means you're listening to us on the podcast. We appreciate that. Make sure you subscribe and leave us a five-star review. We always love five-star reviews. And if you leave us a review, make sure you leave your name, your city, and the state you're from in the review so we can contact you when we do our weekly drawings. Again, we have a drawing that will be announced for next week. We have some turkey calls that we're going to be giving away along with some turkey apparel. So you're going to want to make sure you leave us a review this week to get in on that. Brad, when we left off on the radio show, we were talking about different methods and you know, soybeans and how to get them in the ground and that. But there's a lot of pros and cons to this, you know, broadcasting versus planting versus drilling and that. You know, once you hit on, if you can hit on that, and maybe for the people that don't know what is drilling, I mean, I can see somebody out there with a DeWalt going, hey, this is going to take forever.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know where the term drill came from, but it I think it has to do with the internal mechanism of a grain drill. So a grain drill is usually has a box type of hopper on it, and the rows are usually narrow, 6 to 8 inches apart. So they're not a cheap piece of equipment, but they're a great tool for planting food plots and or you know larger fields. Some are available through county conservation services for rent. It's I don't know that your best buddy would, you know, loan his out to you because they're very prized possessions. But what it does is it allows you to plant, let's just say, soybeans at 50 pounds per acre. You can plant them at pretty much all the same depth and at a meter 50-pound rate. So they are pretty precise on the way that they plant the seed compared to a row planter, you know, a corn planter per se, something that would plant 30 to 40 inches apart and you might plant your garden with. Those planters, wide row planters, are best suited for corn or even sunflowers, things that are planted further apart. You know, corn, for instance, may need to be planted 6 to 8 inches apart in those wide rows. If we were to plant soybeans, the same method, we would plant around 10 seeds per foot. So we can still plant soybeans with a wide row planter, but if you're planting for deer tend to walk up and down those rows, and you made it a whole lot easier for them to nibble on your beans.
Oh, okay.
The third, if that makes sense, the third method would be broadcast. And we have tons of customers who broadcast, and it does require some type of cultivation. We don't just want to broadcast on the ground and think that is deep enough. That is not enough coverage. We want to get that seed 3/4 to 1 1/4 inches deep covered soil. So whether it's a disc harrow or an S-tine type of field cultivator, and then you can broadcast the seed after you work the ground up. and then we want to run back over it, get a little more dirt on top of it. And then you can use whatever method you want to kind of tamp it back down or drag it back out. Some people use chain link fence. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take much for that final pass. But we just want to smooth it back out, take a lot of that air out that you've incorporated with the tillage tool, and that makes a much better seed bed for those soybeans to come up.
Yeah, that's probably one of the best things about the soybeans is that you can use like an ATV to disc up, because they make those nice attachments that go on the back of an ATV. You can just use an ATV to get back in those spots you can't get a tractor, and you know, till it up, and then like you said, a chain link fence with a bar and maybe a brick or a small 4x4 on it to give it a little weight, and just drive it around, drag it, and bury it in, right about a quarter inch, you said?
That's correct. What we do, we have some information on our website, and if anybody's interested in it, if you're broadcasting, we have a table that would basically say, I need 4 soybeans per square foot for this rate of seed. So soybeans are large. They're yellow, almost white, so they're easy to see. Whenever you're swinging out a much smaller seed, you can put out too much seed in a hurry. So soybeans are one of those that it's pretty easy to monitor once you start going.
Yeah, it's funny you talked about smaller seed, because the clover, which we talked about earlier in the show, being such a small seed, I let my son, my 4-year-old Braxton, help me this year put, the winter, frost seeding. And I bought him his own little spreader. I said, here you go. And I put some in there. I said, now you go walk that way. Well, silly me, forgot to adjust the, the lever that amount how it was coming out. After about 10 seconds, he goes, I'm out.
Yes.
I'm like, wait a minute.
Yes.
And needless to say, I'm probably going to have a real thick patch of clover in about a 10-foot section here. So you did bring up sunflowers. Now, that's going to lead me into another question, which I just had asked a couple days ago. And that was, can you mix sunflowers in with your soybeans in the same field? Because they're thinking
to
attract birds and
it makes and it makes a beautiful field of sunflowers in there. You can still spray grass herbicide on that mixture, but it does limit you on the broadleaf. So if you don't have that bad of a weed problem, it is. It makes for a great food plot. Deer will eat both sunflowers and the soybeans, so great choice. Turkeys love mature soybeans, so you're really going to get early season activity in a soybean sunflower field through the insects that live in there. That's what the turkeys will go out there and feed on, and they will peck at the leaves some, but they really like it in the wintertime if there's beans on those plants.
And of course, you put those sunflowers out there, and then we can shoot doves in the fall.
Absolutely. We do try to encourage people to get their sunflower fields planted prior to May 15th, so they will mature in around mid-August, mm-hmm. and that way they have that two-week period there to stage for their dove hunt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah. So do you have sunflowers available?
We do, absolutely. We've got a couple of different kinds. There's Clearfield, the hybrid sunflowers that are available, and we also have the black oil type that is that you commonly see more.
Yeah, the black oil ones are the ones I got from you 2 years ago, and I've been planting it over the last 2 years, and my wife just adores how beautiful it makes our garden and yard look.
They are, and they're a little more forgiving for when Braxton goes out there with your broadcast seeders and gets after it. So there is a difference in the seeding rate and also the cost of them. So Paradovic or black oil are fun and easy to put out for deer.
Those black oil sunflowers, I put those around my chicken pen last spring. I planted just all the way around on 3 sides, and the chickens seemed to love it as the seeds started to fall off. I didn't try to save any of the seeds and dry. My original intention was I'm going to dry them and put them in the oven and roast me some sunflowers to have while I watch football. That didn't work out. But ended up just cutting the heads off and just dropping those in the chicken pens. And for a while, they just looked at them with that chicken look, like, what is this? But then you'd go out in a couple of days, and the head would be completely void of sunflowers. Now, I don't know if it was all the chickens.
Oh, yeah.
Or it might have been the squirrels and the other critters that get in there and eat along with the chickens. But the sunflowers are just fun in that way. I mean, even if you just do a few like I did around the chicken yard.
They are. You see people, whenever they're in full bloom, you know, stopping and taking photos of them. Everyone knows what a sunflower is. The insects love them. And in your case, we do love them. They usually use the very, very large ones for those, you know, ballpark style that you would, you know, roast and eat yourself. Mm-hmm. So, but you can certainly eat these.
Yeah, well. And the fun fact that I know about sunflowers that I taught to my granddaughter, and I had to prove it to her, and she's 11, and I told her, I said, Kinley, in the morning, the sunflowers will be looking over in that direction. And then as the sun goes overhead, the sunflowers follow the sun. In the evenings, they'll be looking over in that direction. And she came and spent the day with us on a Saturday just to watch it. Got up early Saturday morning, looked, and they were facing to the east. Went back out about noon, and they were just, you know, up there kind of mid-position. And then we went back out, and boy, the sun went down, and they were facing to the west. And she's like, Peppy, that's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, it is. Wonderful.
So you can show your smarts to your grandkids, and they won't think you're just a bumbling idiot all the time.
Absolutely. I was going to say, we can tell where Mike's thinking was, because he wasn't thinking about his sunflowers for the deer. He's thinking about his sunflowers for his football games.
That's exactly right. And to beautify the chicken pen, which is, if anybody that has chickens knows, sometimes chicken pens aren't the most beautiful thing on the farm. But sunflowers around the outside will certainly help. All right, so, Brad, we appreciate you being on the program today, both the radio show and here on the podcast bonus. And, again, tell folks that are interested in maybe visiting the Eagle Seed facilities, picking up some seed, where you're located and how to go about getting hold of y'all about making a purchase.
So, yes, we are located in the small town of Wiener, Arkansas, in about 20 miles south of Jonesboro. EagleSeed.com is our website, which has all the descriptions of all the seeds we carry. And you can always call us at 870-684-7377.
Outstanding. Hey, and also I want to remind everybody that if you are looking for turkey calls and that for this year because you didn't check your vest and you forgot to take care of your stuff, we are now stocked up on all of our turkey calls, our box calls, slate calls. So just go to AmericanRootsOutdoors.com, hit the shopping page, and when you check out, make sure you type in podcast, and you'll get a discount for your complete order. So, again, that's only the podcast listeners are going to be hearing this, but if you type in podcast when you check out, you'll get that discount. Brad, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. Mike, any last words?
No, just folks need to get after those food plots and start getting ready.
Outstanding.
Thank you, guys.
For American Roots Outdoors, we want to say, as we always do at the end of the shows, when your roots run deep and strong,
there's no reason to fear the wind.